Hey, this is Jeremy Roenick, and guess what? You guys are listening to the Jim Bob Show.
Hey, this is Wayne Larrabee, and you're listening to Roar on WGN.
Hey, this is Jim McMahon, and you're listening to the Jim Bob Show.
I had to pop a beer for this one.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Brian Urlacher, and you're listening to the Jim Bob Show.
That's awesome.
Oh,
that's
it. How about one? This is Brian Urlacher. I'm not a bitch.
No.
That's about love that one.
Hey, this is John Gruden.
We went ahead and made a commitment to the Bears and ponied up and got the suite. It's been a big disappointment.
Well, you're a hard guy to please. Don't forget that. You're a hard guy to please.
Yeah, they're 40-1, which is shorter than I thought. You know, it.
Why aren't they 100-1?
Yeah,
you know.
720 WGN high atop Chicago in the Skyline Studio. It is the Jim Bob Show, game day edition, heard here and on great stations all around the country. And Jim Bob, excited to have on the line a high school star, a college star, an outstanding NFL player and coach.
So, folks, listen up. Buckle up. We've got a real football man's man joining the show today. He's a former linebacker at Penn State under Coach Joe Paterno, wow. An NFL alum with the Cardinals, longtime coach with Temple and the Tennessee Titans, and of the high school level where he's built champions and men. Welcome here. He is old school at heart, and he's got new school insight. Welcome, Coach Chet Polavecchio. What's up, Chet?
Woohoo! Hey, Jim Bob. Hey, Dane. Thank you very much for having me. It's so good to hear from you again. And we've been talking about this for a long time doing this thing, so I'm really excited.
Well, buddy, I am so glad to have you join us. Is that we're going to start right off the bat. You know, you being from Penn State, let's dig in. You know, you've played, you've coached, you've taught it. You know, how the game is so different from when we first strapped it on when we were kids. But let's talk about Penn State, man. Right off the bat, Penn State and the James Franklin firing. Give us your 2 cents on this.
Well, you know something, it's a funny thing. I've been asked by so many different people about this whole scenario that's taken place. You know, first of all, Jim Bob, when you really look at this, when you look at this from an outsider looking in, this starts with giving people 10-year contracts. So it's not only James Franklin that didn't get the job done to the standard Penn State had established for itself, but the people that award anybody a 10-year contract. Let's look at a couple of the 10-year contracts that are out there. Brian Kelly down at LSU. Well, again, have they been good? Yeah, they've been solid. But has he taken them to where they think he should be or where they think they should be? I say no. Greg Schiano and Rutgers, 10 years there. Are they a solid? They're middle to lower rung Big Ten football team. They make a small bowl every year. Is that good enough? Yeah, but is it a good enough to award somebody 10 years, to be locked into someone who hasn't taken you to that next level? Well, that was the same thing with James Franklin. Again, winning such and such games at the Big Ten level, that was commonplace for Penn State football. What he never understood or what never seemed to me to get across was that you're paid for that 10%, not that 90% of beating most of the Big Ten teams. You're paid for Michigan and Ohio State. Those are the people that you're paid to beat. And now, with the expansion of the Big Ten, you could throw Oregon in that mix. So now you've got three national powers, and that's what you're going to be gauged by. Not how many times you beat Northwestern or Nebraska or whatever. Now, that was lost somewhere. But they had won enough where they were going to maintain that contract. They weren't going to buy it out. There was a lot of money vested into that contract. So we're winning enough where everybody's happy. But now you come across a situation where you lose to UCLA, a team that had lost to New Mexico State 2 weeks earlier, a Northwestern team that just barely beat UCLA the week before, and now you're losing to the lower-rung teams. And that had to be unacceptable. I know it is for Penn State people, but that showed us that you couldn't tolerate that anymore. I can tolerate losing to Michigan and Ohio State to a point as long as you're playing in the playoffs and this and that. But when you start now losing games to those football teams on the home ice, on home field and whiteouts, that's going to be an issue. You know, again, it was something that I believe had to be done. There was a need for a change. It wasn't getting across. The plot wasn't getting across. Drew Aller, what didn't develop as a quarterback? That great defense gave up 300 yards rushing to UCLA. When you start doing things like that in your Penn State, things are going to be caught in question.
Well, let me ask you this. So you obviously saw this coming. It didn't surprise you. I mean, it didn't surprise me when you lost to UCLA, who was going through transition, and then you basically lose to Northwestern. So my question is, Penn State still a destination job, or has the modern game changed what that means to be Penn State? I know you're biased, but I do want your two cents on that as well.
Again, what does it mean to be one of those upper crust year in and year out great teams? It means, number one, it means fan backing. It means facilities. It means recruits. It means all those things that establish a program as a high level program. Now, when you check the boxes, there is no nicer college environment on a football Friday night or Saturday night than Penn State. It's the most beautiful place during a whiteout, 110,000 people. Hard to match that. You're in a great location. You control most of the Northeast, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania. You're the power in this area. So you pretty much control recruiting in the whole area of the East Coast. So when you look at all those variables, again, when you look at variables, has the game changed? Yeah. I mean, in a sense, again, we know the value of wideouts versus running backs, how that's literally flipped over the years, how pass rushers have passed defensive backs, how the style of the game has changed, of course. But Penn State's had those athletes, at least five-star athletes, what the recruiting things say, what we read, they supposedly have had all those athletes over these last years. This was, in his own words, the best coaching staff and the best assemblance of players that he's had since he's been there. And quite frankly, to this point, it has failed miserably. And that's how you assess a program. I don't think it has to do with Penn State changing. Penn State's a fabulous place to go to school. I can always say this as a teacher and a coach. I've never met a kid that didn't love their experience at Penn State, whether you're a student, whether you're an athlete. It's a great place to go to school.
Well, you know, on the coaching standpoint, it's an aspirational place to be. It is a place that coaches want to go, not only because you're going to have those best facilities, those best players, but also a great contract. How, Chet, do you feel this happens, sort of the busts on the coaching side? On a player side, well, there can be just misevaluation or a player doesn't pan out, but a coach, you know, you kind of figure out you've got what it is that they do and what you can expect them to go ahead and do. It wasn't like they're bringing in Nick Saban or something. Like, how do these contracts happen where you have it, where you're sort of overpaying people and then it's a bust?
Well, that's exactly what has to be called in question. I mean, I'm reading about LSU's salaries down the line before we talked on the phone. I'm reading about Alabama's salaries. You have to understand something, gentlemen, and this is, you could take this to the bank. College football coaches get paid more than NFL football coaches. Matter of fact, it's not even close. Not even close. Now, quite frankly, the job is tougher with recruiting, spring football, off-season conditioning. They're on the road away from their families for unlimited amounts of days. It's a different job. It's a nightmare job compared to when I coached college football. Quite frankly, I wouldn't want any part of it the way it is now.
Hey, I get you on that. Is that it makes me want to interject this. How much of the Franklin firing, which I think a lot of it was results-based, but also how much was it about the culture or the NIL politics creeping in the locker rooms? I got to tell you, Saban, you mentioned him. He stepped out because of this. And I'm wondering if the NIL and people not realize it until you get into these situations, that what I call the NIL creep, do you think that that had something to do with it as well?
Jim Bob, first of all, when you look at the inception of the NIL money, it's a nightmare. It's not federally regulated, so every state has their own individual laws, which means that anybody can do whatever they want, given the limitations of whatever state they're in. It has created a nightmare. We have created, in my opinion, created mercenary teams. And what do I mean by that? The reason for the development of the playoff system, you could take NIL money and you could put this right in it as far as one of the reasons this has happened. This playoff system, in my opinion, expanded for one reason. You couldn't get anybody to go to bowl games anymore. Bowl games had no meaning anymore.
100%.
Vegas couldn't even set lines on games anymore because they didn't know who was opting out. You look at stadiums, they were empty. At least now, there'll be at least, what is there, 12 teams in the playoff now? Or did they expand that? Is 12, it 12?
12. Yeah,
12. 12. So there'll be six games that people will actually be interested in. And for the most part, people won't opt out. I know this, Jim Bob. It never dawned on me as a college football player at Penn State to sit out my last game at Penn State University. And I played with some pretty damn good players. Mike Munchak in the Hall of Fame. Kurt Warner's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, you go down the line to Sean Farrell's. I mean, I played with first rounders up and down the lineup. And it would never have even crossed our mind to not spend that last moment wearing that uniform for the last time. Those days are over. These kids have no allegiance to these schools anymore, and we have created it by the transfer portal, by the NIL money. It has become a mercenary sport, or another name for it is a professional sport.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what's happened.
Yeah, I hear you on this. And so here's the deal is that, you know, you being a coach at all levels, okay, I call this era we're in, it's the NIL and the Wild West era of college football. I think it's crazy, and I agree with everything you've said. But you've seen these evolutions. We've grown up through them, you know, the scholarships that we had, the recruiting and compliance. But now with the NIL and the transfer portals, okay, the question is, yep, is this good for players, or has it turned the college football program into pure semi-pro chaos?
Well, like I said, probably the thought of the law, the thought of the transfer portal, the perception that they wanted to give out there was giving a kid another opportunity. He doesn't get caught in a situation he can't get out of where he wastes 4 years. Like everything in life, the intent was good, but the application is becoming a nightmare. You have kids out there that they literally, when you watch a game on a Saturday, they have to give you the list of the previous schools he played at. It's a nightmare. So now what does that create? How do I discipline as a coach? I'm a football coach. The minute I say something this kid doesn't like, or I don't do exactly what he thinks he's entitled to, I turn around, he's got his name in the transfer portal. Or better, how do I develop young players? What does that do to recruiting? Well, you know, as a coach today, you're on a limited leash. You know, other than those big jobs that are awarding 10 years, for the most part, if you got 3 or 4 years, you're lucky. So you're against the clock. You know you got to win now. I don't have time to develop this 18-year-old kid. So where do I get my quick fix? In the transfer portal. I go to the transfer portal. I hope I immediately get a result and I get a positive step forward. The whole picture has been perverted into a thing where you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If I go get a player to make my football team better, I'm hurting my recruiting. I'm hurting my younger players. Mm-hmm. I'm maybe blocking another young kid's opportunity to develop within my program. If you discipline, I might insult this kid or he might not agree with me. I turn around, he's gone. Jim Bob, hey, listen, Nick Saban and guys like Harbaugh, they got out for a reason. They could see the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
And be honest with you, an old guard like us, who the hell wants to deal with that?
Well, and I hear you, buddy. And here's the deal is that I think, and I know you agree with this, and the question comes here at the end. I think players today are going to be extremely hard to coach because of the portal situation, and I think the money changes motivation. That's my opinion. I want you to comment on this in a second. But, you know, also, I kind of want to segue over here if you are running a college program, because we got a buddy who might have a consideration to be the head coach of Penn State, and you named him, Mike Munchak. I don't know if Munch wants the job or whatever, but I know if he gets the job, we're all going to go there and work for free. So I know that. But the fact of it is that I think players, let's start there, are hard to coach, and I think the portal and the money situation changes. But if you're running a college program right now, how do you go back and how do we create that team culture together when half your roster is thinking about transference or other deals, and we're going to bring in a whole new group because we don't have the time? I will tell you, I agree 100% with you. We can't go out and recruit 18-year-old kids anymore. We don't have the time because of the expectations at LSU, at Penn State, at Alabama. So how do you do it, buddy?
Well, my opinion, you have to be true to yourself. First of all, it's like everything. You know, Jim Bob, when we turned pro, remember how we used to fill out those applications and you sit through interviews with various teams and they want to know who you are and try to get to know the person? Well, in my opinion, you got to recruit those type of people. You got to go out there and recruit situational kids that you know will be sold in your program for 4 years. They're going to give you their word. They're going to give you the best they have, and they're going to buy into what you speak. I've got to be true to myself. If you try to make every – I tell this to all young high school coaches. If you want to go out there and be liked, you're going to be a very sad coach, and you're going to be a very short-time coach. I much rather go out there and be respected. This is who I am. This is what I believe in. And this is what we're going to incorporate. I cannot deal every offseason with 25 scholarship personalities and try to be a master of all their personalities. No, they're going to contour what they do to what I want. They're going to come into the program, and these are the rules, and this is what I'm going to go
by. Kirby Smart, the best coach of that, in my opinion. Go ahead.
Well, think about it like this, and maybe it's just a reassessment of the entire coaching philosophy. If you can think of 4 years, that's gravy. You know, that's a bonus. But going back to what Bill Parcells says, oh, someone else is shopping for the groceries. If you look at it that you are just shopping for the groceries for that night's dinner and look at every season as what do I have right now to work with, and just kind of compartmentalize it like that. You can't necessarily think of next year, the year after, what this guy's going to develop into. If it does, I think that's a bonus. But maybe just look at it as, well, this season is what it is. It's like Jim Bob always says, a snowflake. Next year is going to be completely different.
Yeah, no, that's what's been created. That's the modern game. You're going to assimilate to that, or you're going to fall by the wayside in most cases. So you ask me again, what changes that mentality? You have to, as a coach, be true to yourself. Of course, you're going to lose players. But I do believe over the long haul, consistency, that's the word in everything. Consistency on the field, consistency off the field, that creates culture. Consistency creates culture. Culture doesn't create consistency.
I mean, how about this? Is that, you know, Gundy gets fired at Oklahoma State because he kind of refused, not just kind of, he refused to get in this NIL and portal game. And so damned if you do, damned if you don't. And Kirby Smart, on the other hand, they've grasped it and they've taken it. But Kirby is, I don't give a damn if you're a five-star. This is our rules. This is who we are. You're going by our rules. You want to play at Georgia? Here's the deal. Otherwise, pack your bags, get the hell out of here. So I respect Kirby Smart, but a lot of these coaches have been a little reluctant to get in and really delve into the NIL and the portal program. And I think what happens there is those guys are dinosaurs that are, they're just doomed to lose.
I'm not going to sit here, Jim Bob, and tell you that going old school is the way to go. I'm telling you, ask me what I would do. I only know one way, and I know my way worked for a long time. And I know that way under Joe Paterno worked for 50 years. Mm-hmm. I only can tell you what I was brought up in. Now, today, like I said, you have to prostitute yourself to these methods. You have to literally get involved and maybe even get dirty. I don't know. I'm not of the NIL era. I am not of the portal era. I don't know what how these men deal. I always said, I used to say, man, what must a meeting, well, a coach's meeting, be like discussing recruits? I remember we used to have a list on paper. We maybe called the kid two times that week. We had no computers to go on to go look at the kid. We would call the kid a couple days a week, try to get him up for the blue-white game or whatever, and you do the best you can. My God, today, what do you have to do? You got to talk to his business advisor for NIL money. God knows where it's coming from, what company, Nike, Reebok. God knows who's calling you.
Slopped
do they have a department now that just handles the money part with these recruits? It's a nightmare, Jim Bob. And the truth is, I think that's why a lot less and less guys want to do it anymore.
I think one of it is it's just marketing. As one thing gets marketing, obviously there's always going to be a value to money and opportunities and things. But you had mentioned with the Bulls, they just sort of redefined them in a way that built value back into them because they'd lost their value. Make them part of the playoff situation. Put dollars attached to it. You mentioned Joe Paterno and some of those traditional teams where there's value built in to the association, the loyalty, the history, the legacy, all that kind of stuff. I think it's just marketing. If you can build that value up where that is a valuable situation to be a part of, then I think it can translate into success and stability.
Dane, you want to hear a funny thing too? This is an amazing thing. This is something you guys might not have known. Do you know who the original man was that thought players should get a stipend every week financially because of the commitment they have to make to the program, the hours that the program takes of their time between academic standards, between the football part. They don't have time to go get a part-time job. So if they want to go take a girl out to a movie and get a hamburger, it was very hard for those guys. Joe Paterno.
Yeah, Joe Paterno
said it many, many years ago, long before he passed. He said, listen, these guys are earning millions. And before this gets out of hand, we've got to adjust the college game. These kids should get $100, $150 a week so they have some money in their pocket because they don't have time. We monopolize all their time. Mm-hmm. Of course, the answer was back in those days, well, we give them a scholarship. That's fine, but the kids still got to eat.
How about this one, Chet? Is that you bring it up? Is that, is the NCAA ever getting control of this, or is this just the new normal now? I personally think it's the new normal. The only thing the NCAA is going to have to get control of is that, hey, I got to expand the playoff to 24 teams so we can have 12 good bowl games. But, you know, honestly.
Hey, Jim Bob, you know, some of the NCAA, they have enough time regulating basic rules concerning the game of football. Can you imagine them trying to get in to these economic issues that are going to be confronting the NCAA in this future? It'd be a nightmare.
Yeah.
It's good. I don't think they want anything to do with this. And until there's federal regulation, until somebody makes a beef where at least there's a set of rules and bylaws that they all have to go by, you said it the best. It's the Wild West.